You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
Good evening. You're listening to a show called Dangerfield on 101.5 FM The Hawk out of Hamilton, Ontario. I'm Mary, and my guest tonight is Melissa Payne. Melissa is a Canadian singer, songwriter, and fiddle player. Her background is in fiddle and traditional Celtic music, and she's also evolved into a solo career, including three full-length albums. Her live performances have gained her critical acclaim. Her three albums that she's released include her 2012 self-titled album, Melissa Payne, 2014 High and Dry, and 2020's Darker Than Your Dark. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm excited that you're here.
Me too.
So I'm just going to start off the show with a song off your first album, the self-titled Melissa Payne, with the song that I've been listening to on repeat lately called Take Me Away, and then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit about it, okay?
Cool.
Since I've been here, since I left you in all of my fears, now I'm wondering why I left. Give me your shoulder so I can rest. Oh, wanna go somewhere where I've been hoping.
By Melissa Payne. You're listening to Dangerfield on 101.5 FM The Hawk, and Melissa is joining me tonight. So Melissa, thanks so much, and I guess we'll just start there. We'll start with your 2012 self-titled album. And so I guess my first question is, how long between when you wrote your first song, like when did you write your first song? And then what was the process that kind of got you to making your first album?
Yeah, well, that's it's like going back in time now, which is fun. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, exactly pretty much 10 years ago, I started, you know, actually writing songs that I would show people. I think I was, how old would I be? I'm only 27 now, wink, wink. No, I'm 34 now. So yeah, I would have been like around 23, like just like kind of in and out of college and figuring stuff out. I was on tour with Natalie McMaster as her full-time nanny, actually. So like I just had a job changing diapers on the road. So every chance I had, I was either taking lessons off Natalie or writing songs. So right around that time, I was just writing a lot, and I approached a local musician by the name of James McKenty, who used to play in this sweet rock band called The Spades. And I looked up to them so much growing up and sneaking into bars and watching them. And James just opened a studio. So I went to him just to record like a single. And then when I recorded the single, I showed him all the other songs. And he had this friend, Tommy Street, his drummer from the Spades. And they wanted to start up a little boutique label. So I was their first artist that they tried that out with. So yeah, back in 2011, I put it out on my own, and then I re-signed with the Little Boutique label in 2012 with that same record and re-recorded a couple songs and had the studio musicians come in. So yeah, that's kind of how that came about.
I used to see the Spades back around that time, actually, in Peterborough as well.
Yeah, so much fun going to like the Montreal house, which is, it's no more now, but they had like the men's side and the women's side and the smoking room and yeah, the whole works. And it was pretty fun.
And so how did you start playing music? So you play both fiddle and guitar, correct?
Yeah. So I played fiddle growing up when I was like, I think I jumped around the couch like probably for 2 years. So I started like playing when I was around six, but I couldn't read notes. Like I was just the kid that wasn't good at school, and notes just seemed like mathematics to me. So my mom found me a local teacher, like the Leahy family. So one of them gave me lessons and taught me strictly by ear. And I would just learn all these old traditional songs, like pretty much just from tape. And then, yeah, I stopped lessons when I was around 11, and I would just dabble in it a little bit, but I was kind of like awkward teenager, and I would just bring out the fiddle at parties and like stand on the table with my fiddle and like play all these old traditional songs. And then I kind of like got that, you know, like got that fever for wanting to play in front of people, just not on the kitchen table with cousins crowd around. I started writing after that.
Yeah, do you remember the first, like, did you ever take kind of like current songs and then play them on fiddle, for example, or even just songs that you were influenced by, like you took those songs and interpreted them?
Yeah, I think I always kind of like put my own spin, whether it just be like, you know, the tapes would break down and I would just play by memory, but then I would just sit in my room for hours, like listening to like Ray Charles and Elvis and like the cheesiest rock radio or pop radio and just playing my fiddle to that. So I think that really just developed my ear too for just playing along with songs. And then when I picked up a guitar, I had a boyfriend at the time that lent me his guitar, and I was just determined to get better at guitar. So I started playing, and as soon as I started playing, I was like, I can't really sing like all of my like little gal friends at the time were like right into, I don't know, just like cheesy pop singers. I was like, I can't sing like them. I don't want to sing like them. Like I was always influenced by the people with the rough raspy voices, like, that had that uniqueness. So I just started writing my own songs instead of singing, like, the songs that people wanted to hear at parties. And then people started requesting me singing my own songs at parties, which felt great.
And do you feel like you're more, like, your first songs that you wrote, were they to guitar, or were they to fiddle?
The first one was to fiddle. Mm-hmm. And it was a song about my papa and a sailor. It was just like a kind of like a sailor's like rant. I didn't even know how to like piece a song together. But then my second song on guitar, I like streamed together a verse and a chorus and then another chorus and then a verse. And yeah, and I had about like, I come from a really big family in Ennismore where I have like 40 cousins, and that's like who I party with growing up. So they were like my first crowd that I could try out these new songs. So I played one and we called it The Calling. So they would always ask me to play this song called The Calling. It was just god awful. I probably recorded it on like a PC mic, right? I think, and like sent it to friends on like MSN Messenger.
And how important was music like to your family growing up? Like, were you the, did people in your family play music, or were you the person that kind of brought music to the family?
Yeah, I guess it would definitely be my mom. Like, I'm the only one who plays music in my family, but my mom always just had this love. Like, I don't remember like a day that the radio wasn't playing all day and the record player wasn't on and like we weren't dancing and messing around. Like, she came from a family of 13. So like she had a guitar for a day and then one of her siblings broke it in half. So like, I think she really would have sang and played more hadn't it been like the huge family and not being able to afford it. So as soon as I took interest, she was just, I guess like I was walking around with this like little plastic guitar from like the moment I could walk, and then I would put a stick and pretend it was my fiddle because I had like seen local fiddle players. So like I was obsessed with the fiddle. So as soon as I, like, she watched me walk around with this stick and plastic guitar, she bought me the fiddle, and I jumped around the couch for a long period of time until I got lessons. And yeah,
that's awesome. Well, let's listen to another song off of, maybe we'll listen to a song off the album that follows, the album High and Dry. And maybe we'll listen to, what song? We'll listen to High and Dry?
Sure, yeah.
Let's listen to that and we'll come back a little bit more.
So glad I got burned and I'm not healed. No, I am not healed. You got nerve to tell me how it is. You think you know, but you are not healed. We were not here when it all goes out. Be high and dry. Why does took when I got burned, and I am not healed. Well, I am not healed. When it all goes south, you'll be high and dry.
That was High and Dry by Melissa Payne. You're listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk. Tonight I'm joined with Melissa, and we are just talking about music in general. And it's we're going to go through a couple of her albums tonight, and I'm excited to learn a little bit more about each of them. So your second album was quickly followed your first. So you put out your self-titled. So when you put out your self-titled album, I guess, had you been touring and playing shows around it, and then that led to your second album? Or can you talk a little bit about kind of your evolution of performing and how that kind of fed into your next album?
Yeah, so like it was still on the little boutique label, but I just started touring, you know, like jumping in the Civic and like going where I can remember like fitting five of my guys in the full drum kit in my Honda Civic. And we would just go all through Ontario and then going to the East Coast and to Winnipeg and just trying to make a go out of it. I was playing fiddle at the same time for a band called Express & Company, which I had with my boyfriend at the time. So like we were like playing probably 4 days a week or just on tour for months at a time, just trying to make a living and go out of it. So then when I had enough songs to fill out a whole other record, I was like just so eager to get it done. And the Seventh Fire record decided to help me fund that. So we were looking for a producer. I didn't really like, I was still so green at this moment. I didn't even know how to ask like someone to produce a record. So we were kind of I'd met Greg Keeler a few times through mutual friends like James McKenty and my friend Carl. And I was going to get this other producer. I won't even name them, but I told James and James told Greg and he said, we can't let that happen. tell her I'll come out and listen to the songs. Mm-hmm. So Greg came out to Peterborough, like sat in my living room, and like I was super Blue Rodeo fan my whole life. So like having Greg sit in my living room, I was just, you know, shitting my pants, kind of playing my songs. And he was just like smiling and nodding. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to work with you. So that was like a highlight, going to Greg's in, you know, 2013 and bringing all the players in from Toronto and having a full week of recording. Like I'd never done it that way either. It was always just like overdub here or overdub sing your vocals, and it was done a different way where Greg was very like authentic. He wanted the whole band to play each song, so they would like develop kind of those songs like in the studio, almost like around a drum beat or a bass rhythm, or I was finishing lyrics like as we were recording. So it was an exciting time doing that one.
And so when you mentioned that you were about touring, you know, after the first album, for example, and so were there places that you went to that you'd never been to before, I'm assuming, like kind of across Canada? And so do you find, like, can you talk a little bit about like what it's like to kind of go to a city for the first time And then, like, are there certain places that you've been that you've returned to now? You know, I guess it's been, you mentioned, like, 10 years. Like, do you, has it shown you a different way to kind of look at Canada? And what do you kind of take away from each tour? Like, do you kind of go back to the same restaurants? Do you kind of discover, like, how do you approach a city while you're on tour?
Yeah, it's just so much fun. Like, I always just loved going to new cities, but I think playing in them is like a whole different wheelhouse. Like, you can either get struck down with like partying all night and then you kind of waste a day and regret it. But I usually get just a second wind on tour, whether I've been up, you know, hanging out with people, and you just get to dive in with the local and with the community and get all these backstories. So then when you wake up the next day, you're like, oh, someone last night from the bar was saying go here, or, you know, their aunt and uncle own this joint. So yeah, the East Coast I was always drawn to. I'd never really been there too much. So when I started playing music, like, I was just drawn to it because my nanny, my papa, my dad grew up there until he was like around 16. So I have a lot of relatives that I don't even know. So there was this always new and exciting places to go visit in the East Coast. But I really feel like Canada as a whole is underrated. Like, people always give, like, you know, Winnipeg's so cold and they give it a bad rap, but I love Winnipeg. Yeah. Winnipeg's like one of my favorite cities, and, you know, waking up and going, or as soon as you get there and going, like, thrift shopping, like, they have amazing stores and their buildings and their history. And the people are just like so warm and welcoming. I love Winnipeg's like one of my favorites. There's so many little pockets.
Yeah, I was just there this year, the start of the year, from my work. And I really got to explore it because what I love doing as well is like kind of like, I always start with kind of like the art museums, for example. Like, you look up the kind of places to go, and Winnipeg was beautiful. It was freezing. Like, it was the coldest place that I'd ever been. But, you know, we checked out places like, you know, the Guess Who mural and stuff like that. So,
yeah, so much cool music culture. And then I got to go to the Yukon, like, for this Home Roots tour where you literally play in people's living room. It's hilarious because it's kind of like you're staying in your in-laws.
Right.
Like, for a whole 3-week tour, like, you just, like, you're on your best behavior, but you get to see so much of the countryside and the culture and meet so many characters doing tours like that too. So
I heard that about Dawson. I think it's like the Dawson City Folk Fest where the musicians are like actually billeted at people's homes, right? So you get, I guess there's not enough places to like physically stay for all the musicians, so they get kind of put up with different.
Well, the Yukon like Music Society, or I can't remember the exact word for it, it's just so cool. Like, so when we went up there and we stayed in I think it was Whitehorse, they have like a whole Yukon Music Association, so they like put us up in this place that had a bed and the kitchen, and we just thought we were staying at like the Ritz, because usually we'd just be like hunkering down on someone's like basement floor or something. So they like really take care of their musicians there in the Yukon. And
okay, how did you put together kind of like the musicians for your first tour, and how many people, and do you have kind of like a preferred band behind you when you tour, or do you like to do you ever go out on your own, are you always with like at least one other person kind of thing?
I do a lot solo, and I kind of get picked up just from like booking agencies as like a solo opener too. Mm-hmm. Which has taken me to like a lot of little pockets around Ontario, just in the East Coast, just opening up for certain people. So I love the, like, then I got a taste of like the small theaters in Canada being able to open up solo, because they're always just looking to cut costs a little bit too. Mm-hmm. Like, I always have my go-tos for like kind of our barn burner band, and then the two-piece band, and then like the solo band, and yeah, and then like we've opened up for Blue Rodeo a couple times, so I always have like, there's an amazing group of musicians in like Port Hope and Colberg area that play with Jimmy Boskill, and they call themselves the Buttes, so they're always like amazing guys to pick up, and I've been really lucky. I always tour with like just great guys.
And so when you play, so you mentioned they're kind of like solo and then maybe like two people and then a full band. Does that impact, like let's just say if you pick one song that you would perform in three different, like with three different types of people, like the groups, how does that impact the way you perform the song? So let's just take, you know, if you can think of a song, maybe that you've played in all those three different ways, and talk about how the performance of who you're with impacts how you play it. Does it change the way, or like,
Yeah, for sure. Like, so like Thousand Pieces, for instance, like I would play that solo acoustic on the guitar, and whenever there's not a band with me, I really try to reach out to the audience to help me out, because you feel alone up there, and you know, that's what it's about. It's not just about me, it's about the song and kind of trying to do what's best with it. So even like just people like, you know, echoing a foot pattern or like asking them to do anything like that, like if someone's giving me a good beat, then I can pick up the fiddle at the end of that song and finish it out that way, which is always fun. Like it's hard when I can't play the guitar and the fiddle at the same time, so like I always try to bring an acoustic player, but sometimes that's part of the magic too, is just letting, you know, some toe tapping is like, is the band that night, but adding to it so much is the musicians behind it, like having a drummer, like if I get lucky and Lowell Campbell's available, like that's a dream. It just it just really brings up your energy having those kind of guys and that musicianship. And then my bass player Ian McEwen, he's just the guy that everyone like can like look to for chords, so I don't have to worry about like my backline. I just know that he just has it. Like he's going to make all the cues, and I can focus on, you know, trying to rally people up in the crowd and whatnot. So yeah, it really does change the show depending on who you have backing you.
So maybe on that note, why don't we listen to A Thousand Pieces, and then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit more. Okay.
Sure.
Close my eyes and you're all I see. Your voice rages.
1,000 Pieces by Melissa Payne. It's off her newest album, Darker Than Your Dark, which came out in March of this year. And so, Melissa, you had an interesting, you know, time, because the time that you released this album was obviously the start of, you know, this whole pandemic, right? And so, yep. But I've seen that you've adapted really well. You've done a lot of wonderful things. There was something I remember hearing about where you did like a show for your Nana's like nursing home or something like that. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, for sure. Like, so in the beginning of this, like, I was just going like everyone. I just kind of like drop everything and kind of like find ways to creatively get through it. Like, that's just how I cope. Like, I get really low, but then I'll have like those moments of highs where it's like, okay, like I can sit here and feel sorry for myself, but like there's bigger issues and there's bigger things. And so I just think about people like my nanny who are sitting in a nursing home and can't see their friends and family. And I just feel like a whiny musician if I sit around and feel sorry for myself. So I went over there and just played at her window a couple times, and they'd have these like the drive-by things. So I was just playing for the nurses and singing with them. And yeah, so that kind of stuff like really made me feel like we were all together in it. And you know, it wasn't just one person suffering or losing a show or losing release shows. It there's a bigger things going on in the world that actually matter.
And so for your album that came out this year, were all the songs kind of written like recently, or do you like, were any of them from the past, or can you talk a little bit about how you put your LP order together?
Yeah, so it's about 2 years, and they were all kind of written in the same time. Like, we recorded them 2 years ago, so like I would have wrote them anywhere from 3 years to like 3.5 years ago. And I was going through kind of a weird time in my life, like a couple hard breakups, not even like the hard breakups. It's just like the life changing, like, and I was kind of fighting against the grain of, you know, settling down and moving into a country house with this guy. But like my brain just was not settled in every way. My body was just like screaming at me to, you know, get out and get help. So it was coming through in the songs for sure. Like, I was just going through a good depression and just kind of battling my way through. So I kind of love revisiting the songs because it just shows me, like, I just remember a couple times writing some of those songs and being like, I don't know, like, how I'm going to fight my way through this one. But now coming out the other side and just feeling...
And what's
such relief?
What's your process like when you write a song? Like, are you someone who, are you kind of like, do you write down, like, do you do you write down the music and the words at the same time? Does one come first? Does the other come first? And are you someone who kind of like holds a song for a while and then comes back to it? Or like, can you talk a little bit about how you just write a song in general? Like, is it, do you have a consistent process or does it vary?
I wish I had a consistent process. I'd have a lot more songs right now. But yeah, in the past it would just strike me. I just was writing like in the car or singing. Like I still do that. If I'm in the car by myself, which I am a lot, I just love to go and drive or drive people or drive to solo gigs. So I would always just put my phone on and I'll just sing out words. Like I feel like at like 2 a.m. driving, like anything will just pop in your head. And it's like, I got to record this down. And then I'll go home and write it. And I already have like a little bit of a melody just floating around in my head. Mm-hmm. But for Darker Than Your Dark, like I did my first set of co-writes. So I was working with Maya Davies a lot. And that was a really cool process, like letting my guard down and letting out someone else hear those first thoughts that like pop into your brain. Like it's, yeah. You feel pretty vulnerable, but that was really cool. And that taught me a lot about different processes of going through the writing stages. But yeah, like right now I'm just like 3 nights ago, I was just sitting in bed and writing everything I could think of down just word wise and planning out new ideas and then those things will just later pop into my brain when I'm picking up the guitar and strumming. Like they just come out in weird ways.
And do your songs immediately have like their song title, or is that something like, how do you come to that? How do you name a song, I guess?
I feel like the naming of the song is the last thing that I do. Like sometimes on a record, it's like, I don't know, we call it waltz track because it has to be to a waltz, or it's like the four on the floor track. So it's funny, like sometimes I'm just like, okay, I like this catchy, there's sometimes it's just obvious that the hook of the song should be the title, but then other times it could just be like a verse line that you kind of want to take.
Yeah, well, why don't we listen to Darker Than Your Dark off of Darker Than Your Dark.
Okay.
Darker than your dark, I'm paler than your pale. I made myself your mirror. Watch my light slowly fail. You taught me only fear. You wrap me in your curse. I'm darker than you know. I'm deeper than your hurt. I close every door, turn every lock and key. Every light's burned out, shattered just like me. Your mirror, watch my light slowly fail. You taught me only fear.
given the political week that we are having right now, you had a very interesting experience happen, in the past couple weeks, I guess. So you recorded a song with Bob Young, who is Neil Young's 78-year-old brother, and it was his first time ever recording a song, and I think it's called Hey America. And from what I've read through, publications that I read religiously, such as Rolling Stone and more, like Canadian publications as well, like Exclaim, it references the fact that, a band was put together with such people as members of the Sadies. I think James McKenty, correct, was also in there, was he?
Yep, James, yep. And then the Weber Brothers.
Maybe take us through kind of like how that happened and what kind of an experience that was for you.
Yeah, well, Bob's been like a pal for, I guess, since I like really started like just beating Greg and the whole gang. And he's such a character, and he's like an ambassador of the arts, I would say. He always like claims that he's not a writer or a performer, but like when the moment strikes him. So he is always in your corner though, and trying to like scheme new shows and all this stuff, and just pitching. He's always pitching my album to people. So when he told me, I think it was like when Trump first got voted in, which was so shocking at the time. And I was playing a little house concert, and Bob said he wrote his first song. So that's like the first time. He's like, I don't even know how to play guitar, but I can strum these three chords that sound like chords to me. And he started singing Hey America. And like, there was just so many sweet little hooks in there. And it was like really ringing true. And it's been ringing true, for the past 4 years, and now more than ever. So he said that he's always wanted to record with Neil, but it's just hard to find time, that they're both in the same country and working out geographically. So yeah, when he asked James to put it together, and Neil sent his like local film crew to film it for Bob, and then Neil heard it, and that night he called James McKenty, and like me and James, like our religious, like we just love Neil Young, and super Neil Young fans. Like I get even just giddy talking about him, just because it's so, there's so much music and history, and he's just inspired so much, I think, with so many Canadians. So when Neil showed up to lay down some like harmonica, then it really, took it to that next level and made it like more of the anthem, because Neil's so passionate about his views on America politics as well. And yeah, so it was pretty surreal. And the song just really speaks some truth right now.
And what
America needs help.
What are your favorite Neil Young songs? I'd love to hear it. This is awesome. I love to hear it.
Oh, there's so many. Like I've always loved Unknown Legend. I always sing that one for Katie. She's my my blonde haired lady. But I always sang, I think the first song I taught myself was, God, now I'm drawing a blank. Was like Harvest Moon. And then,
did you ever go to, in Omi Me, where they had that Youngtown, museum? It closed down now, but I guess it's, there was a really cool, Omi Me, Ontario, which is, I guess, just southwest of you, maybe where you're at.
Yeah, so like Omimi is pretty much like connected to my hometown, Ennismore. Like they kind of like turn into each other. It's funny. Yeah. So yeah, I like stopped in there a few times. And then when Neil came through like 2 years ago, I was lucky enough to go watch that show at the Coronation Hall, which I played in a couple times. It's like a little sister to Massey Hall. So it was the same architect. So Neil like has a special connection with it because it's his hometown. So he really wanted to do a show. So yeah, a whole bunch of us locals and a bunch of musicians were so lucky to go and watch that. Neil live at Coronation Hall, the little sister, Massey's little sister.
Yeah, and you mentioned, so you've recorded a lot with Greg Keeler. Do you have a favorite song of his that he's written?
Oh, there's so many good ones. Mm-hmm. I really love, like, we're recording right now some live off the floor stuff. And yeah, some of his best ones are like, I feel like coming now too. They're beautiful. Black Feather. Nice. Is my new fave right now. I just can't get it out of my head. So his album's coming out in January, I think. But yeah, that one's stuck.
Yeah, and you also you did a tour with Matt May's band as well, correct? And
yes.
And then you also recorded on Twice Upon a Hell of a Time, which was his you know, reinterpretation of the album Once Upon a Hell of a Time. So what's it like often? So I think like a lot of the music, it sounds like a lot of the music that you record, you like doing kind of more live off the floor. Is that correct? Kind of.
Yeah. Just kind of like pretty spontaneous recording, yeah. I would say. So like that kind of came about. I've loved Matt's stuff. Like I recorded Downtown on my High and Dry album and I didn't even know Maddie at all then. We just like got one of the musicians to call him and ask him if I could play that song. And of course he was like, yeah, man, that's awesome. Yeah, for sure. So then when I was recording Darker Than Your Dark, we asked him to come lay some vocals. And then that turned into him asking me to come lay some vocals down for Twice Upon a Hell of a Time. But yeah, I kind of just walk into those sessions like with an open mind and hope that like I can do the song justice and just go with whatever the producer or a guy like Matt just like, yeah, just try this or like, that's awesome. They just amp you up to go outside your comfort zone too.
I got to say that, you know, just the energy that you bring is like, I haven't seen you in the studio, but I've seen you perform like on stage and seeing you bring a different kind of energy to those songs was like pretty magical. And I think that you're a really good friend to a lot of good people and you kind of bring that out in people as well. Like, I think the way you play music, gives like comfort to people and allows them to experiment. And then you bring another dynamic to the song. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. It's just music is so wonderful. That sounds really cheesy and cliche, but it is really just like something that always sticks with me that Greg Keeler always says it's not really about our ego. It's like about the song. And as soon as you kind of let go of that part, you can really like open yourself up to like what can this song do, what can like all the musicians kind of like play such a huge role. And just I feel like the songs themselves kind of are like, you know, little gifts from the universe, and we just gotta kind of do our best to shine a light on them.
One of my favorite things is just hearing like, you know, I like the, you know, the rawness of the demo, you know, version. And then you hear kind of like how it can evolve into a recording and then different elements of performance. So it's just, it's a pretty magical thing, which is, and it gives a lot of hope to people, I think, in these times, especially where, you know, people are confined to home more than often. And I think that, yeah, I think it's pretty magical. So before I forget, I want to just mention to folks here some of your website addresses. So your melissa-payne, payne.ca. Your Instagram.com is Melissa Payne Music, Melissa, payne, music. And your Bandcamp is mpayne.bandcamp.com. And so Melissa's joining us tonight. Melissa, let's listen to another song off your latest album, or if there's another one that you want to hear. First of all, thank you for giving me your album. It's been fun to dig into. Do you have another favorite song off of it?
Maybe we'll dive back into the High and Dry one, and we'll We'll do a shout out to Maddie and we'll play Downtown.
That'll be awesome. Okay, let's do that. And then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit more.
Cool.
Babe, it seems like so long since you heard your favorite song playing downtown, playing downtown.
Was Melissa Payne singing Downtown, a cover of a song by Matt Mays, a wonderful friend. And so, Melissa, besides that song, which is you did a wonderful version of, are there any other covers that are your favorites that you're kind of like go-tos that kind of, like maybe let's go by mood. So like what's your favorite cover to sing if you're blue? What's your favorite cover to sing if you're happy?
Yeah, I feel like It's so funny. I always turn to John Prine covers, like, and he can cover all the bases. If you're sad, happy, or just feeling like weird, like, he can just cover it all in even one song. So I love covering John Prine and just sitting around and finger picking some songs by myself around the house, which I'm doing a lot of these days. But yeah, I've always just liked to.
And do you have any recorded of you singing John Prine?
Oh, I probably do. Yeah, I could send you one too. Yeah. I think I have some on my Instagram of, I did one that I've done for the last like 6 years of Long Monday. So that's one of my favorite songs ever written. It's just so beautiful.
Well, thanks so much, Melissa, for being my guest tonight on Dangerfield. For those that had a listen, I hope you enjoyed Melissa's wonderful spirit and wonderful music. And take care, Melissa, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
This is CIOI 101.5 FM.
The Hawk is on the air.